organizations that can't be accused of bias towards Palestinians. The report only reveals the tip of the iceberg of the crimes being committed in that horrible camp, which does not adhere to any moral or legal principles.
Reports indicate more than 36 Palestinians have been killed under torture in Sidi Tayman camp alone, with Palestinian sources speculating that the real number is much higher. Israel continues to ignore all international humanitarian laws in its onslaught on Gaza and in the treatment of the Palestinian prisoners. The inhumane practices comes amid the international community's silence and the humanitarian organizations' inaction as the Palestinians suffering mounts day by day. نقاء حامد رام الله.
A tense few hours in this part of London ahead of a potential anti-immigrant, anti-Muslim far-right attack. Their target, a legal center in this public building that supports refugees. There is fear in the air. Shops and offices have closed early. There's heavy police presence. Before long, anti-racist protesters assemble to protect the building, their numbers swelling quickly.
I've heard of multiple points being targeted tonight by the far right, and I think it's my duty to come here as a migrant myself, but also as a professional, and stand by refugees.
I feel safe, but there's a lot of people who don't feel safe. They might not come for me the first time, but it might come for me the second time when the ethnic cleanse or whatever craziness is going on.
The far right threatened online they'd be here by 8 p.m.
Well, the dark has started setting in. Police are still lined up outside the library to protect it. A counter-protest still ongoing behind us. Businesses shut down earlier in the day in anticipation of far-right rioters showing up in the area. But up to this moment, there is no sight of them.
Other than North Harrow, they threatened to hit tens of other targets across England. In Walthamstow, in the northeast, a massive crowd kept agitators at bay. Similar action in Liverpool and other cities. Earlier in the week, the British Prime Minister warned those responsible would be punished.
Anybody involving themselves in this disorder is going to feel the full force of the law.
Several days of rioting up and down the country have seen attacks on mosques, hotels housing immigrants, and people of color. More than 400 rioters have been arrested, three handed jail sentences. The answer as to why this happened isn't simple.
This has not come suddenly, okay? Our elected representatives, our MPs, our media are as responsible as your Tommy Robinsons and Nigel Farage. If you look at our governments, both Labour and Tory, we have a 30-year history of some Islamophobic anti-immigration policy, Islamophobic anti-terrorism legislation that's been introduced by both parties. We've started wars against non-white countries for no reason whatsoever based on a lie. All of this has led us to where we are today.
For now, at least, this library is spared. But the North Harrow community fear is not over yet. Saeed Purza, London.
Under the banner Loyalty to the Blood of the Martyrs with Gaza Until Victory, students from Sana'a University took to the streets in a strong show of support for the people of Gaza and the broader Palestinian struggle. The demonstrators raised banners affirming their steadfast support for Palestinians, highlighting the unity and resolve among the Yemeni students.
Our demonstration today is a repetition of the weekly rallies of Sana'a University every Wednesday in support of the Palestinian people and to tell them that you are not alone. Every moment you live, we suffer with you. And we tell you that if we had the opportunity and able to enter Palestine, we would not wait at all because Yemenis are among the struggling and resistant people who have proven over the years that they do not submit to any aggressive forces in the world.
Chants filled the air, calling on regional resistance forces to respond to the ongoing Israeli genocide in Gaza, urging a collective and powerful response to what they described as Israeli war crimes. The demonstrators also condemned the international community for turning a blind eye to regime's daily killing of innocent civilians in Gaza.
We came out today in solidarity with Palestine, and we assure them that they are not alone. We are with them, with our men, women, and children, and we congratulate them on the occasion of the appointment of Yahya Sinwar.
As the protests came to an end, the message was clear. The students of Sana'a University are committed to the Palestinian cause, advocating for justice and peace for the people of Gaza.
As the protests continue, the students hope their voices will reach the international community and to prompt meaningful action to stop the bloodshed of women and the children in Gaza. For now, their message is clear. They will always stand by Palestinians and their cause. Abdulatif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
Twenty kilometers north of Amman lies Baqa, the largest camp for Palestinian refugees in Jordan. There are more than 190,000 refugees in this camp, whose residents rely mainly on UNRWA support. Many families here, like Murad Abu Hamada's, struggle with poverty and limited assistance. What makes it even harder for Murad is being jobless for years now.
I can't work because of a car accident 15 years ago. The person who hit me wasn't insured or licensed. While my chest fractures were treated, the pain remains. I get breathless easily and can't exert myself, so I'm unable to work.
Murad is a father of four girls and a boy.
Dalal, 13 years old. Muhammad, 5 years old. Layla, 7 years old. Batul, 10, and Rital, 11 years old.
Rital says that neither she nor her siblings have any school allowance. They go to an UNRWA school where no meals are provided.
We don't receive our allowance. We haven't eaten fruit or meat in a long time.
The family lives in a crammed two-bedroom apartment that could barely fit a family of this size. 5-year-old Muhammad has a skin condition. Murad says he took him to the hospital but can't afford treatment expenses. Murad leads us to his kitchen and shows us his refrigerator. Empty. Despite the reinstatement of UNRWA funding, which was suspended following Israel's war on Gaza, many families are going through difficult conditions. According to UNRWA, poverty and high unemployment are major challenges facing the residents of Baqa. The camp ranks third among 10 Palestinian refugee camps in Jordan in poverty. It also ranks second among the 10 camps in terms of unemployment. Standing here in the Baqa camp, the largest Palestinian refugee center in Jordan, it's clear that the daily struggles faced by families reflect the broader challenges in the camp. Despite the reinstatement of UNRWA funding, the needs remain immense, with many continuing to hope for a better life amidst ongoing hardships. Rad Bush, Baqa Refugee Camp, Jordan.
In a fiery address, Turkish President Erdogan criticized the international community and the West for failing to respond effectively to the war in Gaza. He asserted that the international community has not learned from the invasion of Iraq, the conflict in Syria, or the Russia-Ukraine war, arguing that bloodshed and oppression have become the norm in the world. Erdogan added that institutions established for global security, such as the United Nations and International Court of Justice, are losing their influence.
The West is an accomplice of Israel. They do not hide their support. On the contrary, they applaud killers incessantly. History will record your stand. Those giving a standing ovation to the lies of Netanyahu, the Hitler of the modern era, cannot wash off this stain from their hands. Those cheering Netanyahu while trampling on the tragic memory of the oppressed will not be forgiven.
The Turkish president stated, perpetrators of genocide should be in court, criticizing the United States for its recent endorsement of Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. Erdogan condemned the U.S. Congress for hosting Netanyahu, whose speech at the Capitol in July was met with applause from the majority of lawmakers. The Turkish president added, "It is incomprehensible that someone responsible for the death of 40,000 people is giving a red carpet welcome." Analysts argue that Netanyahu's visit to U.S. Congress signaled a green light for further violence and escalation, as evidenced by the assassination of Hamas political bureau chief Ismail Haniyeh and Hezbollah leader Fuad Shukr.
"I don't understand why we are surprised the United States, through its statements since the beginning of the war, has repeated the same remarks that it is behind Israel, supporting Israel politically and by sending arms. The U.S. is encouraging Israel to kill and terrorize Palestinians. We must realize that the United States and Western countries are the same. There is no difference between them. They all support Israel, and they are complicit in the killing of Muslims and Arabs in the Middle East. The United States and Israel are in control of this war. They are currently escalating it, and if it hadn't been for the green light that Washington gave Netanyahu, he would not be able to continue the war."
The president stated that social media companies are behaving like mafia when it comes to issues that threaten their interests. Erdogan says Turkey is facing digital fascism at the hands of those who cannot tolerate seeing photos of Palestinian martyrs. Turkish authorities have blocked access to Instagram, citing reports that the social media platform removed posts offering condolences for the assassination of the Hamas political leader Ismail Haniyeh. Erdogan's comments reflect ongoing tensions between Turkey and Israel over the war on Gaza, as well as a broader dissatisfaction with Western support for the Israeli regime. This is likely to also negatively impact Turkey's already tense ties with the U.S. Rashan Saglam, Istanbul.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, who allowed none to witness when He created the heavens and the earth, and who took no helper when He authored the spirits. He has no associate in divinity and no support in unity. Tongues fall silent before the limits of describing Him. Intellects fail before the core of knowing Him. Terrents fall low in awe of Him. Faces are humbled in fear of Him. And everything mighty yields to His mightiness. So to Thee belongs praise again and again, well measured, continually and methodically. And may His blessings be upon His messenger endlessly, and His salutation everlastingly, eternally. O Allah, make the beginning of this day of mine righteousness, its middle prosperity, and its end success. I seek refuge in Thee from a day whose beginning is fright, and whose middle is anxiety, and whose end is pain. O Allah, I pray forgiveness from Thee for every vow I have vowed, and every promise I have promised, and every pledge I have pledged, then failed to keep for Thee. I ask Thee concerning the complaints of Thy servants against me. If there is a servant from among Thy servants, of a handmaid from among Thy handmaids, who has against me a complaint, because I have wronged him in respect to himself, his reputation, his property, his wife or his child, or because evil words I have spoken about him in his absence, an imposition upon him through inclination, caprice, scorn, zeal, false show, bigotry, whether he be absent or present, alive or dead, such that my hand has fallen short and my capacity has been too narrow to make restitution to him or to annul my obligation to him, I ask thee, O he who owns all objects of need, which are granted by his will and hastened to his desire, that thou blessest Muhammad and the household of Muhammad, peace be upon them, and makest the one I have wronged satisfied with me in the manner that thou willst, and givest me mercy from thee. Forgiveness decreases thee not, and giving injuries thee not. O most merciful of the merciful, O Allah, give me on every Monday two favors from thee: the facility to obey thee at its beginning, and the favor of thy forgiveness at its end. O he who is Allah, and none other than whom grants forgiveness for sins.
Now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Hello and welcome to Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashemi. Thanks so much for being with us. Well, from morning prayer to the funeral prayer, that's what Palestinians in Gaza experienced on Saturday as a genocidal Israeli regime sent missiles to hit the school where displaced families are living. People were praying their morning prayer when the missiles struck, cutting many men, women, and children into pieces. Then they prayed the funeral prayer for their dead as over 100 people were killed. Meanwhile, most of the world continues to watch and allow this U.S.-Israeli carnage against Palestinians to continue. We're going to look at this on the Spotlight. I'd like to welcome my guests to the program. Christopher Hilali, researcher and political analyst out of Vermont. And Larry Johnson, former CIA analyst out of Bradenton. Thank you both for being with me. Well, Christopher, I'm going to start this off with you. I mean, let's start from here. Why does the regime continue to target schools?
The regime continues to target schools in violation of international humanitarian law because it continues to say that in these schools there are Hamas leaders, militants, military operation centers, that there are weapons caches, that there are many of these things that they continue to try to justify and rationalize why they continue to bombard these schools, not only schools, but also hospitals and other areas that are supposed to be under the laws of armed conflict prohibited from being targeted. So, of course, the Zionist regime continues this unabetted, and nobody holds them accountable in the international courts or in the international law realm because, of course, they're acting as a rogue state with impunity. And they have, of course, the U.S.'s backing through all of this.
Well, Larry, I mean, according to the United Nations, 477 out of 564 school buildings in Gaza have been directly hit or badly damaged. I mean, this is a report from July. I mean, your thoughts on this? This is absolutely unbelievable. People there were sheltering because, of course, the regime had already made them leave their homes. I mean, your thoughts?
Well, I've lost count of the number of places that have been bombed by Israelis. that were initially set up to be designated sanctuaries, places that families could go to be safe. And they're told to go there by the Israelis. They arrive, and then they are murdered in this way. So it's not an accident. This has nothing to do with a military operation. This is a deliberate strategy by the government of Israel, the pursuing the Zionist cause to exterminate the Palestinians, to make sure that they can no longer inhabit any of that land in Gaza or in the West Bank. And, you know, they don't care who they kill or how many they kill. And what's so troubling, though, is the rest of the world, there's still things the rest of the world and other countries could do. For the life of me, I don't know why, you know, the Arab and Muslim nations have not shut off the oil that's flowing out of Syria. I could cut off the oil. Without the oil, Israel's not going to be able to continue to do this. But, you know, here we have Erdogan allowing gas and oil to continue to flow into Israel, which enables and permits the military to carry out these kinds of atrocities. I mean, candidly, up to this point, the only nation that has stood up and fought and shed blood to stop the Israelis have been the Houthis in Yemen.
Right. Well, with the you were talking about the Syrian oil. Of course, Turkey. Yes, they are involved. Unfortunately, Syrian oil not coming from the government part of the country. If there's Syrian oil flowing, it's probably that oil that's in the hands, unfortunately, that the United States is stealing. Well, Christopher, I mean, what the Israeli regime is saying about this latest massacre is that. Let me just read it and quote it, that the Israeli military said it's precisely struck Hamas terrorists operating within a Hamas command and control center embedded in the Al-Tabi'in school. I mean, let us say that even there were some military commanders or Hamas individuals in there, which I have no proof of that and whatever. But the point is that when hundreds and hundreds of men, women, and children are living in a school, what would give the regime the right to bomb it in the way that it did?
They have no right. It is illegal under international law and the laws of armed conflict to strike a school or a hospital or another or religious site or any other protected place. Even if that place is housing militants or militant leaders, you cannot strike those areas. And that is a indisputable fact of law. Now, of course, the Zionist regime continues to bypass that, saying that somehow these command and control centers and these militants pose an existential threat for the Zionist state, and therefore they are legitimate targets. But of course, there is nothing in international law that would say and that would allow them to use military force against these types of targets, especially these protected sites, which have so many displaced people that were told that going to these places would provide them safety and security, and instead have turned into centers of destruction and carnage and devastation. So ultimately, there is no rationale for this under any legal precedent. Only under the Zionist internal military law is it allowed. And of course, it's allowed because they are pursuing a genocidal policy, as my colleague, Mr. Johnson, rightfully pointed out. This is the policy of the regime now. There is nothing that will stop them at this point internally from pursuing a policy of total annihilation of the Palestinian people.
Right. Well, Larry, the U.S. says it's deeply concerned when it hears reports of these civilian casualties. But a U.S. National Security Council spokesman said, quote, "We know, though, Hamas has been using schools as locations to gather and operate out of. But we have also said repeatedly and consistently that Israel must take measures to minimize civilian harm." Your thoughts about these statements, Larry?
The United States has no moral standing to make any comment other than to condemn what Israel's doing. I mean, look, this week we commemorated the 79th anniversary of the United States dropping atomic bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki, killing hundreds of thousands of civilians, men, women, and children, just like this. When you look at the conduct of the United States and Great Britain during World War II in bombing German cities, yeah, the Germans were declared as the enemy, but we were killing civilians regularly with the bombings that flew over Germany. The last estimate I saw was somewhere on the order of 900,000 German civilians died. So, you know, the United States has never had any real compunction about. We pretend to be concerned about the killing of civilians, but, you know, even look in Vietnam and My Lai. Again, the anniversary of My Lai was celebrated this past week. It's, an odd, ironic coincidence. The United States could stop this in a heartbeat. That we control the purse strings, we control what Israel's military can do, and we're enabling them, we're facilitating them. So, in that regard, the United States is aiding and abetting something that's worse than a war crime. This is a crime against humanity. And if there is a God, then God's judgment will weigh heavily upon us.
Yes, indeed, indeed. Well, Christopher, the U.S. is scheduled to provide the Zionist regime with, or providing it now, with $3.5 billion more. In your perspective, can the regime do anything that would prevent Washington from providing more money, more equipment, and supporting it? Or basically, are they in this together? It's a U.S. Zionist genocide.
Absolutely, it's a U.S. Zionist genocide. And as Mr. Johnson pointed out, the United States is aiding and abetting the Zionists in these atrocities and in this ongoing genocide. We are now 10 months in, and nothing has stopped the Zionist war machine from continuing this mass carnage and atrocities that we've seen. Nothing has stopped them. No amount of protesting, wrangling, trying to get U.S. politicians to stop it, trying to change the political scene, trying to bring the Zionists in front of the International Court of Justice, nothing has stopped them from this ongoing devastation and atrocities and this ongoing genocide. Now, of course, I think that it's very important to recognize here that the Zionist regime can only last so long as the United States continues to support it and defend it. And they have continued to make, both political parties have continued to make broad overtures to the Zionists that they are in this together and that they will defend the Zionist entity till the end. It's almost eschatological. It's a religious, messianic type of relationship. And so in that way, Netanyahu is able to come to the U.S. and command the entire Congress and command the entire American political and military establishment to continue to support to the highest levels the arming, the funding, and the continued military operational capacity of the Zionist regime. And nothing, it looks like, will stop that at this point.
Right. Well, Larry, looking at Gaza, I mean, there are reports that the bodies of those killed in this latest massacre at the school on Saturday were so decimated that pieces of body parts were being picked up and put in individual bags based on weight. I mean, this is absolutely horrific. I mean, your thoughts as really we look at the world sitting and watching this. Of course, we have seen and heard some condemnations from various governments and political entities. But as we speak right now, the horror continues for the Palestinians.
Well, what it's showing is the impotence of this international world order that was set up in the aftermath of World War II. The foundation of the United Nations was supposed to prevent something like this, but because the United Nations now is still effectively under the control of, let's call it the European colonial interests, when you allow the United Kingdom and France to sit on the Security Council and have a veto power, when, you know, candidly, there's nothing in the stature of those countries that would should permit them to be in that position, and they ignore the more populated countries of the global south, then where we see in events like this where there should the condemnation be should be swift and certain, and instead some condemn it, but then it's blocked by the United States and the rest of the the colonial legacy countries. So that's why we're seeing a shift towards BRICS. That's why, you know, countries including Iran are moving towards BRICS. I think out of BRICS we'll see a new world order emerge, but out of this new world order will have to come a concerted action that countries like Russia, China, India, Brazil, South Africa, and the other nations that have signed up come together to act and enforce punishment on countries like Israel. And again, I don't think we necessarily have to get into killing to bring an end to this. The economic power exists to shut Israel down.
Well, let me just stop you right there. Let me just jump in here, Larry, because you said you don't think that we'd have to get into killing for this. However, if the world order is transitioning, do you think that the United States would let that happen without a fight? And are we not right now in the middle of that transition?
Well, yeah, they're going to try to fight, but here's the good news. We have seen the Houthis, who are not exactly a first world military power. They have stopped the U.S. Navy. They stopped and defeated a U.S. carrier task force group. And it's gotten virtually no coverage. And, you know, the Americans, we're trying to ignore it. Oh, paying no attention to those guys in sandals carrying curved knives running around in the desert. But the fact of the matter is, after 9 months of concerted military attacks by the United States with the United Kingdom and French and other NATO members, they couldn't stop the Houthis. So that's what I mean. What we're seeing is the limits of U.S. military power are now being exposed. Yeah, the United States can still do a lot of damage. We're really good at killing defenseless people that are unarmed, that don't have air defense or air power. We're really good at beating up on the weak. But when it has to come to going up against somebody who has our same capabilities, I don't think we can hold it. We can stand with them.
Hmm. What about that, Christopher? Because do you think that that is what we're seeing? I mean, this is all part of this transition of global power when we look at the United States and how it is dealing with what is happening in Gaza and also the whole Western hegemonic front. And on the other hand, what Larry just said about Yemen military or Ansar Allah, that on the other side, they try to exert themselves, but they also expose how weak they've become. I mean, your thoughts on that?
I absolutely agree. And of course, if we look at this not as merely one front, but a multifrontal, a sort of a global transformation that's happening, we see it not only in Southwest Asia and in Africa, where now the countries like Burkina Faso, Mali, Niger have kicked out or are in the process of kicking out all foreign troops, including the U.S. troops that are there, that were conducting, quote-unquote, operations against terrorism. But we're really there to maintain and to enhance U.S. neocolonial rule on the African continent, along with the former colonial powers like France. We're seeing it also in Latin America, where the victory of Maduro and the Venezuelan people is once again a real defeat for the United States and for the Western and for its Western allies and regional proxies. We're seeing in Eastern Europe, where billions of dollars of armaments and funds are pouring into Ukraine to this fascist junta in Kiev, that they're being defeated. They are being defeated. The Russian military is working on overtime to try to ensure that it meets its goals of the special military operation. And of course, in Asia, in the Pacific, the United States can try to exert tremendous pressure on the DPRK and on China and on other countries of this new multipolar reality. But they are being defeated. These countries are becoming stronger as they move closer together with one another. We saw that with the comprehensive strategic partnership between the DPRK and Russia. China and Russia's relations are at the highest level they've ever been. And so long as the United States continues to try to foment problems in Taiwan, in South Korea, in Japan, these powers united can certainly push back against the United States and its regional allies. And so I think that certainly we've reached the limits of U.S. military power. Mm-hmm. And now, of course, other forces can be at work, like economic power, as Mr. Johnson said.
Okay, well, Larry, what do you think it's going to take? What is it going to take to stop this Holocaust?
Well, like I said, either the countries that have the access to control the oils shut it off and apply the economic pressure, or the United States wakes up and finds a conscience, which I think is unlikely, and cuts off Israel. Barring that, it's going to have to end militarily. I don't think Israel can ultimately kill all the Palestinians, but they're sure going to try. And you certainly have people within the Zionist camp there, the likes of Ben-Gvir and Smotrich in particular. I mean, these men are demonic. There's no other way to describe it, where their ability to carry out inhuman acts on Palestinian prisoners and celebrate it, to actually put it on television and celebrate the rape of the sexual violation of men.
I mean, it's shocking. You're talking about some of the more extreme individuals, as they're called, inside of the regime. But isn't it symbolic, technically, of the whole, that they would actually show this on Israeli television and get away with it?
Look, there was a poll conducted by Channel 12 in Israel the other day. Almost 50% of the country approved of it. So what you have, this is reminiscent of the story of Sodom and Gomorrah, where you've had a society that has become so immoral, so evil, that the only thing left for it is to be destroyed, because it has strayed so far from the commandments of God. And really, if Judaism is what Judaism claims to be, and it is a covenant between the Jewish people and God, then they have an obligation and a duty to conduct themselves as these children of God. But instead, they are behaving like the emissaries of Satan. And I mean, it's shocking.
Well, Christopher, your perspective, when we look at everything that we've been talking about and the current situation that is happening inside of Palestinian territories and the world in general, is the resistance the only way forward for the Palestinians? I mean, do they have any other alternative?
The Palestinians have tried BDS, boycott, divestment, sanctions. They've tried every legal recourse, international law. They've gone to the UN. They've gone to all these international organizations, regional organizations, the Arab League. They've gone everywhere they possibly could with their hands stretched out for peace. But of course, when you reject the olive branch, the only thing that's left for the Palestinian people is the rifle. And at this point, the Palestinian people have said that we have been left here to fend for ourselves. What more can we do? And so the heroic Palestinian resistance is the only thing left for the Palestinian people, whether that's armed resistance or whether that's, for example, resistance like mass strikes and boycotts of even working in Israel 48. That's the only thing that's left for the Palestinian people is mass action. And at this point, the Palestinian people are united across all factions, Islamist, communist, secular, religious. It doesn't matter. All of them are united in support of the resistance. And the armed resistance now is carrying high the banner of the Palestinian liberation movement. And we hope that with God's providence, they will be successful.
And final thoughts, Larry, I mean, about the role of the resistance and the whole resistance front, actually, in defeating this Zionist regime.
Well, this is, I'm not sure we want to call this a miracle, but a welcome development out of the suffering is that after years of looking at a sectarian rift between Sunnis and Shia Muslims, we've seen that divide has simply been erased, that the Muslims, they're coming together as Muslims across the board and sharing, a recognition of shared humanity and shared values. And that's, I think that's a very powerful force. And that's, if there's a silver lining to this horrific dark cloud, which is the the murder of all these women, children, and men in Palestine. That is one. It gives some hope for the future that there will, out of this darkness, there will emerge a light. And that light will bring with it, I pray, the dawning of freedom for the people of Palestine.
Hopefully for the people of Palestine, the region, and the world. Thanks so much for being with us. Christopher Hilali, researcher and political analyst out of Urshot, Vermont. Larry Johnson, former CIA analyst out of Bradenton, Florida. And thank you for being with us on another Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashemi. Goodbye.
Imam Ja'far Sadiq, peace be upon him, has said, "Whoever remembers us to Ahlul Bayt and his or her eyes fills with tears, his or her face will never burn in the fire of hell."
In the limelight.
An Arizona woman has admitted to lying on official documents in a doomed attempt to hand Donald Trump the 2020 presidential election. Lorraine Pellegrino, a Republican activist in the state, pleaded guilty on Tuesday, 6th of August, to one count of misdemeanor, filing a false document. She was sentenced to unsupervised probation and community service, according to her lawyer. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The national broadcaster CBS News has covered this story and tells us more. A Republican activist who signed a document falsely claiming former President Donald Trump had won Arizona in the 2020 election is the first person to be convicted in the state's fake electoral case. Lorraine Pellegrino, a former president of the group Our Two Key Republican Women, has pleaded guilty to a misdemeanor charge of filing a false document. Arizona Attorney General's office spokesperson Richie Taylor said on Tuesday, 6th of August. Taylor declined to comment further. Records documenting her guilty plea have not yet been posted by the court. Still, court records show that Lorraine Pellegrino was sentenced to unsupervised probation. Before the plea, she faced 9 felony charges. 17 other people have been charged in this case, including 10 other Republicans who had signed a certificate saying they were duly elected and qualified electors and claimed Donald Trump had carried Arizona in the 2020 election. President Joe Biden won Arizona by 10,457 votes. Joshua Colesrud, an attorney representing Pellegrino, said in a statement that his client had accepted responsibility for her actions. Lorraine Pellegrino's decision to accept a plea to a lesser charge reflects her desire to move forward and put this matter behind her, Joshua Colesrud said. On Monday, 5th of August, former Trump's campaign attorney Jenna Ellis, who worked closely with his personal attorney Rudy Giuliani, entered a cooperation agreement with prosecutors who have asked for charges to be dismissed. The remaining defendants, including Rudy Giuliani and Trump presidential chief of staff Mark Meadows, have pleaded not guilty to conspiracy, fraud, and forgery charges. Lorraine Pellegrino and 10 other people who had been nominated to the Arizona's Republican electors had met in Phoenix, Arizona on 14th of December 2020 to sign this false document. A 1-minute video of the signing ceremony was posted on social media by the Arizona Republican Party at the time. The document was later sent to Congress and the National Archives, where it was ignored. Lawmakers went on to certify Joe Biden's win over Donald Trump during a proceeding that began on 6th of January 2021 and was delayed after a mob of former president's supporters breached the U.S. Capitol building. Prosecutors in Michigan, Nevada, Georgia, and Wisconsin have also filed criminal charges relating to the fake electoral scheme. Jenna Ellis, who was also charged in Georgia, pleaded guilty to a single felony charge of aiding and abetting false statements and writings. Arizona authorities unveiled the felony charges in late April. Overall, charges were brought against 11 Republicans who submitted the documents falsely declaring Donald Trump had won Arizona. 5 lawyers connected to the former president and 2 former Trump aides. Donald Trump himself was not charged in the Arizona case, but was referred to as an unindicted co-conspirator in the indictment. He is facing state charges in Georgia and federal charges in Washington, D.C., stemming from an alleged scheme to subvert the transfer of presidential power after the 2020 election. The former president and the 2024 Republican presidential nominee pleaded not guilty to all the charges. The American newspaper New York Daily News has also covered the same story and tells us more. An Arizona woman admitted to lying on official documents in a doomed attempt to hand Donald Trump the 2020 presidential election. Lorraine Pellegrino, a Republican activist in the state, pleaded guilty on Tuesday, 6th of August, to 1 count of misdemeanor, filing a false document. She was sentenced to unsupervised probation and community service, according to her lawyer. Lorraine Pellegrino was one of 11 Arizona Republicans who posed as official electors as part of a nationwide scheme by Donald Trump and his allies to subvert Joe Biden's electoral victory in the 2020 presidential election. Similar groups of fraudulent electors were assembled in Michigan, Georgia, Nevada, and Wisconsin. The 11 fake electors were charged in April with various crimes alongside several Trump allies, including former New York Mayor Rudy Giuliani and former Trump Chief of Staff Mark Meadows. Donald Trump himself has not been charged in Arizona. Lorraine Pellegrino was facing 9 charges before she cut the plea deal. She's the first fake elector in the nationwide scheme to be convicted. Lorraine Pellegrino's decision to accept a plea to a lesser charge reflects her desire to move forward and put this matter behind her, her attorney Joshua Colesrud stated. Earlier in the week, former Trump attorney Jenna Ellis agreed to cooperate fully with Arizona investigators in exchange for immunity from prosecution. Jenna Ellis cut a similar deal in Georgia, where Donald Trump was included as one of the defendants. Other former Trump attorneys, Sidney Powell and Kenneth Chesbrough, also agreed to testify against Trump in that case. When the fake elector scheme ultimately failed, Trump supporters stormed the Capitol building on 6th of January 2021 and attempted to stop the peaceful transfer of power by halting certification of the election results. The British newspaper The Guardian has also covered the same story. A Republican activist who signed a document falsely claiming Donald Trump had won Arizona in 2020 became the first person to be convicted in the state's fake electoral case. Lorraine Pellegrino, a past president of the group Awotuki Republican Women, has pleaded guilty to a misdemeanor charge of filing a false document. The Arizona Attorney General's Office spokesperson, Richie Taylor, stated on Tuesday, 6th of August. Richie Taylor declined to comment further. Records documenting her guilty plea have not yet been posted by the court. However, court records show that Pellegrino was sentenced to unsupervised probation. 17 other people have been charged in the case, including 10 other Republicans who had signed a certificate saying they were duly elected and qualified electors and claimed that Donald Trump had carried Arizona in the 2020 election. Joe Biden won Arizona by 10,457 votes. A lawyer representing Lorraine Pellegrino, Joshua Colesrud, said in a statement that his client had accepted responsibility for her actions. Joshua Colesrud said Lorraine Pellegrino's decision to accept a plea to a lesser charge reflects her desire to move forward and put this matter behind her.
This is the Heart of Life Pounding IRIB English Radio.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Palestinian civilians fall victim to Israel's strikes across Gaza as thousands are displaced following the regime's recent evacuation orders. The Iraqi resistance warns that if the US uses the country's airspace to attack Iran, its response will be bound by no limits. And the Hezbollah resistance movement fires a volley of rockets at the headquarters of Israel's 146th Division in the north of the occupied territories. Hello everyone from the studios in Tehran. Thank you for joining us. Relentless Israeli strikes continue to claim Palestinian lives in Gaza as the regime presses ahead with its air and artillery strikes across the besieged strip. In one of the latest strikes, a Palestinian paramedic was killed along with his family after an Israeli airstrike targeted his house near the southern Gaza city of Khan Yunis. At least four people were killed and several others injured in a separate strike on the same city. To central Gaza, three civilians were killed in Israeli bombing of homes in the Sheikh Radwan neighborhood in Gaza City. An unknown number of Palestinians were also killed after Israeli shelling elsewhere in the Strip. Meanwhile, some 75,000 people have been displaced in southwestern Gaza following new evacuation orders by the regime. That's according to the UN Agency for Palestinian Refugees, UNRWA. The Israeli aggression, which started in October, has so far killed nearly 40,000 Gazans and injured more than 91,000.